Election College, episode number 295, FDR, part 4.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Jason, in the last episode, I teased a little bit at the end there that we might see another run from FDR. And there's also 4 episodes to the FDR saga, so I guess you probably could have imagined he was probably going to be running for at least a third term.
It's like
maybe even a fourth or a fifth, who knows?
Yeah, it's like 4 is the magic number, or 3 in this case, but we'll get into 4.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh man, foreshadowing.
There should be some, like, I should put some scary music here.
You probably should.
Yeah, Ben, when you're editing, if you're not too lazy, put in some scary music here. And if you are too lazy, just cut this part out. And if you don't do either one, people will hear it and laugh. Okay, we're good. Roosevelt is at the end of his second term, and he's thinking about running for a third term. Of course, George Washington kind of set the precedent, the idea that not run for more than 2 terms. And it's never really prescribed anywhere yet, but it's kind of just tradition. And FDR says, you know what? I'm not going to say whether or not I'm going to run, because I don't want anybody else seeking the nomination yet, because I don't want them to know whether or not I'm going to run.
Crazy guy.
And yeah, at the time, Germany is just like running rampant through Europe at the time. And Roosevelt's like, well, I have the experience. Things are going haywire. I probably should run.
Yeah, it's really interesting because on the domestic front, Wendell Willkie, we talked about him before. Mm-hmm. We did an episode about him. Go back and listen. He's like, hey, New Deal. That wasn't too bad. But on the whole international front, I think he's going to drive us into war. So vote Willkie. Yeehaw.
You think he said yeehaw? It was on his signs and stuff?
If it was, he would have won the election.
That's probably true. Well, at the 1940 Democratic Convention, Roosevelt basically didn't have any competition. I mean, he did have competition. He had one guy by the name of Farley. He lost. He had another guy. You might recognize him as Vice President Garner. And of course, we'll do an episode about him later. But yeah, his vice president decides to run against him in the primary. And he just kind of turns against Roosevelt during that second term. And Roosevelt's like, well, I mean, needless to say, man, you're not going to be my vice president again. So he goes and gets the Secretary of Agriculture named Henry Wallace. And he was very supportive of the New Deal. And he was very popular in the farm states, which is good considering he was the Secretary of Agriculture. And people were pretty okay with it, but not everybody. There were some that felt that he was too liberal. They were too conservative and he was too liberal, that he was too radical and eccentric, and that he would probably make Roosevelt lose.
Did we do an episode on him?
No, I don't think so.
Oh man, I can't wait for that episode. That's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. So anyway, long story short, the race is basically tied.
Yeah. Unless you are a proponent of the Electoral College.
Dun, dun, dun.
Where Roosevelt, I was going to say spank, but that's probably not politically correct.
No, probably not.
Trounces Willkie in the Electoral College, even though it was only 55% of the popular vote, but it was like 85% of the electoral vote. So there you have it. Roosevelt is the president again. The guy kept us out of war. Sounds familiar. And then by the time 1941 rolls around, you know what happens.
Yeah. We're going to skip across a lot of the nitty-gritty stuff that happens that leads us into the war, but you're familiar. I mean, Pearl Harbor happens. Tragedy, of course, but it can't be ignored any longer. And so FDR says, all right, we're heading in. We're going to have to float China alone. because they're really hurting right now because of Japan and Germany really going at them. And oh yeah, we're probably going to end up dropping a nuke here pretty soon.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. A lot of what Roosevelt does on the domestic front in his first two terms, he does on the foreign policy. And probably the biggest thing that we see as a carryover from this is the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And these people make the final decisions on American military strategy. Up to that point, it was kind of like, well, the president does his thing and he says what happens, but the United States isn't that heavily involved in foreign affairs up to this point. I mean, outside of the whole Latin America dealings that they had, the United States wasn't as huge of a military power at this point as it is now.
Well, and a lot of that you can attribute to Roosevelt from, you know, growing the military from, I think it was just under 200,000 to over 1.5 million or right around 1.5 million. That's a lot of military growth in a very short amount of time. So that happens, and basically he meets with Churchill. They develop a plan, and then they establish the whole combined chiefs of staff thing to, I think, the combined chiefs of staff to help coordinate all this military policy and making sure that supplies are allocated and that the two entities work well together during the war. Then the Joint Chiefs of Staff comes along, which help him make the final decisions on all the strategy and everything that's happening. And of course, you know, there's the nuclear program happening, the Manhattan Project, etc., where these nuclear weapons are being developed. And Churchill is with Roosevelt on that as well. They're jointly pursuing it. So it's not long before Roosevelt comes up with the idea of the four policemen, you know, called themselves the Big Four. We know them as the Allied powers. It would be the United Kingdom, the United States, Soviet Union, and China. And they're all going to go against the German troops and the troops under their command and who are working alongside them, along with Japan.
So it's during this era that the concept of a Union of Nations reemerges very strongly. And in 1945, Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt hold a conference. And that establishes the United Nations. And they agree on the structure of the UN Security Council. And the purpose of the Security Council is to, quote, ensure international peace and security. We'll see how that goes in the decades afterwards. But the three work together, and with a balancing act of the Eastern Front dealing with the Japanese invasion of China, as well as other areas in the Pacific, and then on the Western Front dealing with Germany and Italy and the advances that they were making, including advances into Africa. Interestingly enough, it's during all of this that Roosevelt chooses Dwight Eisenhower to serve as the multinational coalition commander in Northern Africa. Kind of interesting. During this whole era, that the lines were a little bit more muddied between Democrats and Republicans. I think everybody was kind of finding their place and perhaps working better together, regardless of their political persuasions. But anyway, the United States is now a world power with the beefing up of the military. And all the while, Roosevelt is changing it all up, changing U.S. foreign policy.
So back on the home front, while everything's going on, it's crazy because things are actually going kind of well as far as the economy goes. War tends to create jobs and create a void that people need to fill. So unemployment gets